Nick, how's it going, man? Great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Doug. I have been a long time watcher of the show, so I'm happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, we were able to connect and say hello way across the country over in Portland at FinCon, and I had a fun time, but we didn't get to chat as much as I hoped, and like we were always passing each other. But anyway, we're going to get into all the details, and like I said, happy to have you on the show. Great place to start is the CBS, I think it was the Sunday morning, I can't remember, but I saw that it came out. Many of my friends were sharing that around, and I was on a trip with my dad, and I was like, hey dad, check this out, it's pretty cool. You know, I go to these retreats occasionally, and some of my friends are on here, so I got him to check it out. So what was that experience like being on like national television?
It was very interesting, Doug. I've had people ask me, like, hey, you know, how did you end up even being selected to be on there? And I said, you know, it was more or less being available and accessible, because it's not like I had my people call their people and it worked out. Really, what happened is that the year before that, so this was recorded in March and April of 2025. And so if I go back to my Camp Fi experience in 2024, I remember talking to Steven. I said, Steven, I would like to present next year. And he's like, cool. So at that point, that particular point, I was on the clock. I had to figure out what I wanted to present. And I came up with my topic, and I had been working on it. So I had been working on that topic for around a month. I mean, it's not a month, but a year. And so it came, Camp Fi Southeast happened. And while we were there, Steven mentioned that, hey, you know what, that he had been contacted by CBS Sunday Morning and that they were going to come, and they were doing, every year they have this money episode. And so what happens is that they were going to come, and that they were going to be there on that Sunday, I believe, of the camp, and that they were going to come and maybe like interview some folks and get some footage. And I'm like, okay, I did not think a whole lot about that at all. You know, I didn't, you know, sit up and strategize on how I could get more camera time or anything like that, even though I was scheduled to present at that particular point. So the day came, they came, they had interviewed a lot of us under the pavilion there, just kind of asking us some general questions. And that went fine. They interviewed me. They interviewed a couple other people who were there. Like, if you saw that piece, you would have seen Matt and Yana, like the Coast Five couple, they were on there. Brad, Rebecca, who were like the admins of our local group here in Jacksonville. So there were a lot of us who were there. And so we went through, we had our interviews, and then they decided to actually come into the, like the, almost like auditorium. And it just so happened that they came into the auditorium in real time for me to present. And so they just decided to kind of start recording some of what I was presenting then. And I didn't really notice them because I was kind of in my zone. I kind of zoned out, but I kind of noticed this boom mic coming closer and closer and closer to my face. I'm like, okay. So what happened, literally, you know, I got finished, it was over. I'm like, phew, because I had been thinking about doing that presentation for a whole year. And so it's over, it's done. And so I went back home. I didn't think much about it, Doug. And maybe a week later, I get like a text from this guy saying, hey, you know, this is the reporter who was at Camp Fi. Would you be interested in another interview? And I'm like, okay. In my head, I'm thinking that, you know, he's going to come here and maybe talk to like the rest of the group and stuff like that in the local Jacksonville group. He's like, all right. I tell him, yeah. He's like, okay. He's like, send me your address so I can come to your house. I'm like, whoa. I was like, what are we talking about here? And he's like, yeah. He's like, I can be here, I think he said like the end of this week or something. I was like, the end of this week. And so at this particular point, Doug, you're a married man. And, you know, there's a difference between clean and company clean. Now, there's a whole different level to national television clean. And so from that particular point, my wife shook off that to-do list that I had been putting off all this time. And I mean, from sun up to sundown, man, I was working. And so I got the stuff and everything. So they came in. They literally set up like a whole kind of studio here on the back enclosure of my house. They like asked us questions. They wanted to make sure how, where they wanted us to sit, how the lighting worked, everything else. And I sat down, and literally they got here probably like 9 o'clock that morning. And they stayed to probably 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. So they were there for like 8 hours to ultimately, you know, that like 5 minute piece that not only included me, included like, you know, Mr. Money Mustache and Mickey Robbins. So they did all that. And they're like, hey, you know, what'd you like to do? Like, I like to play golf. And so like, hey, you know, is there a course close by? I'm like, yeah. So it's like, okay. So literally I grab my clubs, I go there, and they're like recording me. And I'm like, people don't actually think I'm like somebody, you know, this whole, you know, for this professional camera crew following me to play golf.
Yeah.
But fortunately they were closed. So I hit a few balls. I just chucked a few balls, and they made me look like a way better golfer than what I really was. And so really that whole kind of thing went on. But literally it was done. And, you know, I almost felt like I had the, I just want to do my best to try to convey the community in a positive way. And so I really wanted to be very mindful with the things I said. And it was so much stuff that I was like, didn't make the cut that we talked about, because I think probably one of the biggest things is that kind of at the end, you know, a lot of times, you know, you go and you look in the comments, right? So I remember going down once a piece was done, I remember looking at the comments and apparently at the end of that piece, if anybody has not seen it, they asked the gentleman who interviews us, say, hey, you know, what are you getting ready to do for the rest of the day? And so he asked my wife, and my wife said, well, he's like, you know, I got to go get my son from, like, I think it was at football practice. Like, now I got to go to the grocery store and stuff like that. And he's like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, well, I'll go play golf. I'm like, she doesn't need me for that. And so literally in the comments, and he's like, oh, one of you seem more retired than the other. And so I go look in the comments, and old people were big mad that I said I was going to go play golf. And my wife went and said that, you know, she's going to go get my son and go grocery shopping. But the thing is, Doug, my wife doesn't like me to go to the grocery store with her. We've done that before in our marriage. We've been together for 30 years. And she does not like when I go, because I'm like, honey, I was like, we got a list. Let's go there. And let's get out. My wife likes to peruse the aisles and stuff like that. So literally her routine is that she'll go drop my son off for football practice. She'll go shopping and then she'll pick up myself for football practice. So it wasn't anything strange. Yeah. So that was kind of like something I got to kick out of. But overall, it was a great experience. So.
Yeah, that's pretty funny. I typically do the grocery shopping for our family. Okay. And maybe similar to your wife, it's kind of like my quiet time. I can go, like you said, she goes around the store. Maybe she finds something new. Whatever, listen to an audiobook, listen to nothing, whatever she wants to do. But it's just like, yeah, she does the thing. And yeah, it throws me off the rhythm when my wife joins me, because now, you know, we're working on it together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So that's my wife's territory now. So I rarely go with my wife shopping, if ever, for especially groceries.
Yeah, I gotcha. Very cool. And I think you all did a great job, and what a big commitment to agree to it. And you're like, maybe they'll just ask a couple questions. But I've had a couple friends who have been in a similar situation, and yeah, they take over your space. They're setting up lights everywhere. There's a bunch of extra people. And then 100%, I know what you're talking about. When we have guests, like we invite people over, because it does force us to clean up a little bit more. Oh, yeah. We're pretty tidy, but yeah. Then we start wiping baseboards. We're doing some extra stuff. So I get you on that. That would be a whole other level. So, okay. Great story. Let's go back much further. So when did you hear about Phi originally? How did it come on your radar? And then we'll get into some of the details of the journey. But yeah, what was your first initial exposure for the idea of Phi and retiring early?
Well, Doug, I had not heard of it at all until, I want to say, September 2020. Around that time frame, because, you know, everyone was pinned up in the house. It was still, you know, prime pandemic. And I was going down some YouTube rabbit hole, and I had crossed Our Rich Journey. And somehow, like, they came up in my feed and they talked about FIRE. And I was like, I've never heard the acronym before. But I've always been a money nerd, Doug. I mean, literally as a kid, I remember my mom asking me to borrow $2, because I used to always have my money with me. So I had my $2. And I said, Mama, I was like, I can, but I'm going to have to charge you interest. I'm like, oh, this is a loan. And I was like 8, 9 years old then. So I always understood the concepts of like interest and like all this other stuff. Now, granted, my mom was not interested in paying me any interest. So I forgave anything they had accrued on those $2. But when they mentioned Choose FI, well, they mentioned financial independence. So I was like, okay, so at this particular point, I started like searching for like financial independence, stuff like that. And then Choose FI popped up in like my podcast player. I was like, okay. So I started listening to it. I was like, oh, this is different. And so I just kind of, I binged, because I mean, it was nothing to do but be home. So I binged for a while. And at some point in one of those videos, one of those recordings, they made mention to like to local groups. I'm like, oh, I was like, local groups. So I went through, I went online, I looked, and I saw that we actually had a group here in Jacksonville. And so October of 2025 is like when I had October 2020 is when I had my first in-person meetup of the group. And so I went there. They were very welcoming to me. I did not have anybody in my, I had friends, but I didn't have friends that thought about money the way I did. So it was good to like kind of be around people who was like, hey, you know what? I'm not into materialism. I'm just into, you know, helping individuals get to where you want to financially. We believe that money is a tool, you know, to buy back your time and stuff like that. So all that stuff really resonated with me. And so, you know, I I went all in. Now I got to the point where I started, even to this point, I will try to organize kind of like, if I know I have a meetup on a particular day, I'll be like, okay, I can't go out of town this time, or I'm going to try to work around it because I enjoy connecting with the people so much.
Got it. Okay. And then, I mean, you moved really fast. So it sounds like you discovered Phi September 2020, and then you went to the local group just the next month.
The next month, yeah. I was at the point, Doug, I'll be 50 in a couple, you know, like a week or two. I was thinking, I'm like, okay, where am I in my life? My kids don't need me as much because they're getting older. And I kind of like started looking around. I was like, I kind of need friends. I was like, how do you make friends as like a 47 year old guy? Because honestly, when you think about it, most of the time when you're at this point in your life, your friends are from like high school, college. You know, that's typically like the kind of your friend group that you have. So at that particular point, I didn't have a whole ton of friends. Like, I want to make some friends. And so one of the things my wife said, like, hey, you know, try to find people who have, you know, just common interests and go there and see, you know, what happens. And so literally the local groups really came at a good time for me because I was already looking for kind of my tribe, you know, or to expand my friend group. And it just really worked out that, you know, I went there in October and I really connected with a lot of people there.
Great. Yeah, that's something I'm aware of. And like, I see that I'm very lucky to live in Longmont, where there's a lot of people with our similar interests, with free time. They're free during the week, and we're roughly around the same age. So it's good for us, especially as men who often, like, it'd be pretty easy for me to just stay in the basement and do my thing down here and just kind of be in the bubble versus making the effort to go out and go on a hike or whatever. So very good that you identified that, sort of taking action. And now how's your community? How's your tribe? Like how would you describe it now?
You know, it's interesting. And I was telling, I was talking recently with my wife and even with some of the people out there, I was like, man, I was like, now, like my immediate friend circle now is like kind of people that's been in this next phase of my life that are in this financial independence community. You know, that's really the bulk of the people that I have now. Now, granted, I still have some friends from high school and some people I was in the military with, but people that I connect with routinely or the people from the Phi group, cause we still have those like interests. They have time. I can't call all my friends and say, hey, you know, let's go hang out. Let's go catch some tacos. They can't really just break out into the air. If you want, like, hey, you know, let's go run down to, you know, one of the springs and go hang out. They can't do that kind of stuff. So it's really good to be able to connect with those individuals. So I have to say there has been a large influx of people in my friend circle who are from the community. So I'm excited about that.
One of our problems that it's a dumb problem, by the way. So I'd preface that. We have such a great network of people that there's too many activities and we have to be like more selective. Again, great problem, but there's only, I'm not specifically introverted, but there's activities that I want to do that, well, basically I don't want to be around too many people, right? So, or I'm like, I want to go to the gym and be by myself for a little while. All that to say, I also don't want to go to like, whatever, five different social events where there will be like in 1 week where there's like 20 plus people. I have identified that I've been getting a little bored with like small talk, which I think I'm not unique in that way, but at some point it's just like you're telling the same stories over and over again to a number of different people. And I'm like, this is kind of getting boring for me and I need to switch it up because it's not the person, it's me. And I have to, that's my own problem there. So, all right. So your network is very strong now. And I think Jacksonville has like a pretty amazing Choose FI and just FI community in general. So you guys meet often, a lot, it's pretty structured and everything.
Yeah. Brad and Rebecca, shouts out to them. And they do a great job down here as our coordinators and facilitators of our group. We used to meet monthly. We still meet monthly, but now we do a lot of things during the week as well. We typically have like coffees on Fridays. A lot of times we'll get together, we'll do Taco Tuesdays. Those are pretty much outside of the monthly meetings. The Taco Tuesdays are my favorites. Yeah, so we'll do those. And we just do a series of things. I mean, sometimes, you know, we'll get together, we'll go out of town. I mean, it's just a lot of things that go on here. And it's really inviting. And we just really, and this is one of the things that I always want to do, and I didn't have it before I was able to, before I had kind of transitioned over to the REPs, that I was like, okay, I need more than this once a month. And I was like thirsting for stuff. So I was happy that, you know, we had the situation where we had someone here in our group named Jen. She's really good about organizing coffees. We have someone else in our group, Diana. She does like almost like monthly book clubs. We get together to do book clubs. So we have a mix where everyone's kind of like taking ownership of like a particular kind of component or function within the group, and they organize it. So we always have something to do. So it's always great.
So back to the story, you discovered Phi. It sounds like you had a strong interest in finances for since you were a kid, basically. So were you like, hey, we've been doing a good job and we could retire soon? Were you like immediately thinking, hey, we could retire? And maybe you could tell us about how your career was shaping up around that time frame. And I'll leave it kind of open, asking two questions at once there.
Yeah, no, it's no problem. I knew once I really started to understand some of the kind of common kind of tenets within FIRE, understand that, you know, the delayed gratification, the intentional spending, stuff like that. I was like, we're already doing all this stuff. But then we had to get down to the numbers piece. And at that point, I knew I was supposed to save. I knew I was supposed to invest, but I didn't really know what the finish line looked like. You know, I was always like disciplined, you know, doing that. So becoming a member of the community really helped me to understand that last piece that, okay, well, you know, I know people, you know, talk about, is it really 4%? Is this, but even just having that, understand that, okay, if I can understand what our yearly expenses are, multiply times 25 as a good rule of thumb, as far as where we need to be, as far as investments. And in 2020, I looked at, I was like, we're not very far away. I was like, I think in the next probably 3-4 years, we can probably hit that. And so that gave us kind of a finish line or a target to hit. And I guess one thing that's kind of as far as like our journey and even going around that part, I've, like you said, Doug, I've always been very passionate about personal finance and investing, things like that. And so even when my wife and I first got married, I told her, hey, I was like, if you're okay with it, just let me handle the finance piece and we're good. She's like, that's fine. So I started off doing that. But one thing that I did, or I realized, I feel like, because my wife was a college professor, I started off as a computer programmer. That's what I started off as. Even back then, computer programming in Florida is very different than computer programming in California, as far as like salary wise. And so what happened is that this was back in 2000, year 2000. And so I knew that, I was like, we're not going to get to where we need to get to on the salaries that we're making. So I felt like we need to do something else. And so literally in 2003, we both left our jobs and we opened up a business. And what we decided to do is use for seed money all of our investments. So all of our 401ks, like everything we had, we just kind of pulled it all out. And unfortunately got that hit for pulling that money out. And we used that to start our business. And that business was a used car dealership. That's what we went into. We did that for about a year. And I realized several things. One thing, I realized that I was too honest for the used car business and that it did not align with my personality. We burned through literally everything we had between 2003 to like 2005. So it all went. Actually, me and my wife recently, and my wife's a trooper, because this was kind of my idea. She entrusted me with her 401k, and she pulled it all out. She gave it all to me. And I had to go back and tell her, I was like, honey, I was like, it's all gone. I was like, and we got to go back there. Yeah. And I was like, we got to go back and take our regular jobs. And my wife looked at me and she said, hey, you did what you did because you thought it was best for our family. And yeah, she didn't say another word. And when she said that, I was like, man, I was like, it's no way I can disappoint this person again. And so at that particular point, we went back at it. And in 2005, I picked up another computer job. She went back teaching again. Actually, we were taking multiple jobs at that point because I was doing computer programming during the day. I had my degree, so I was doing some adjunct teaching at night. She was doing adjunct teaching as well in another school. So we were just doing a lot of it. And so from like 2005 to probably 2010, we both worked duplicate jobs. And we got to the point from 2005 to 2010 where we kind of regained where we were at. We had, you know, a reasonable nest egg again. And so we, at that particular point, we're like, okay, now we can start back investing and doing things like that the way we were. And literally, so when 2020 came around, we had been at it for 10 years. And so we had like, we still had that discipline. And so once I learned about FI, I went back and looked at the numbers. I was like, okay, I was like, 3-4 years, we can do that. So if we just continue doing what we were doing, we'll be okay. And so literally my wife in 2023, she had been teaching for, you know, around 20 years. And she was like, hey, you know what? That retire early thing you've been talking about. She's like, I want to get some of that. And and literally in my head, I was like, man, I was like, you earned it. I was like, cause I mean, you've been here with me. I was like, I think about, you know, the grace that she showed me when I basically blew through like all of our savings and everything else. And so she RE'd in 23. I worked for like another year. So in 24, my RE, I'm made up to the point. Like I said, she stopped being a psychology professor. I was still doing computer programming. I had kind of switched over to cybersecurity, but I was still in that space. 2024 is when I decided to go ahead and step away from that.
Gotcha. And what month in 2024?
I want to say it was September.
All right. I was trying to remember because we were back in Atlanta then, right?
Yeah, I met you. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And I was going to say, I remember we chatted and you must mm-hmm. have still been working a little bit, or you were just about to leave. Like it was definitely yeah. in those weeks or whatever. And I've forgotten mm-hmm. that it was like, it was all coming together right then
yeah.
for you.
Yeah. That's when I was going to step away right around that time. Yeah. Cause I had like, it gets a little blurry because I had like some saved up PTO time and stuff. So I like burnt it out at the end before I left. But yeah, it was right around August, September timeframe. Because I know I went on a cruise September 8th. I do remember that because I was all on right. the cruise. Because we always do cruise around that time. So it was a little bit before that. So it was probably until in August.
Got it. Okay. Man, there's so many things that I want to get into here. Mm-hmm. Just going back to the used car dealership thing, that mm-hmm. seems like a, I don't know, that's like a premise for a movie or a sitcom or something. It just seems like crazy, man. I didn't realize that you did that. What drew you to that specific business model? Did you have someone in your family? Are you a car guy? Were you like, I see these are good deals, or what happened?
No, I was not a car guy, and I didn't have a family. And so it came down to two things. I was torn between real estate or doing the car lot. And here in Jacksonville is huge. I mean, literally, you can drive from one side of Jacksonville to the other and it'll take you an hour in no traffic. I mean, so people really value having a car here. Individuals will sleep in their car if they have to versus having their own place. So cars are just a necessity here. To be able to get a car is a whole lot lower barrier of entry than it is to get a house. And so I decided to go that route. So I did it. And so I started off because the traditional premise behind used cars, Doug, was that years ago, what happened is that you could go to a used car auction and you could buy a car. And the goal with that is that you buy that car for the amount that you ask someone to make a down payment. So you could go to a used car auction, buy the car for $2,000, hopefully get it for like maybe $2,500. And then you ask somebody to come, say, hey, you know, you can get this car for $2,500 down. You give you that. So if they never come back, you know, you're not really out anything else a profit. And so that was kind of the model I was trying to go with. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is that in the car business, there's a lot of, I tell people all the time, like that car that you had that you decided to trade in and like it barely made it to like the dealership and like, oh, you know, it overheats and the heads are cracked. Well, those cars end up going to the auctions. And a lot of times the people who end up buying those are the people at the mom and pop dealerships. And so I'm pretty sure if you got rid of a lemon in the early 2000s in Jacksonville area, I probably bought it. Because oh, I tell man. You. I dealt with so many cars there, man. But what happened is everyone I learned a little bit more. But unfortunately, I got to the point where by the time I had felt like I learned enough, I had ran out of capital. Yeah. I just didn't. So I was like, you know, I had to make a decision. I was like, I still got a wife and a mortgage to take care of. So I had to go and have that conversation with my wife and tell her what it was. And we actually recently like kind of calculated the numbers on like how much we felt like we lost. And we went back and looked at it. And it was about $150,000 even Gosh. Back then.
Man,
yeah, it bit, man.
Man, thanks for I know that's a great story for your pod, or just a story to tell, like overcoming mm-hmm. the adversity over time, mm-hmm. or like what a bad idea looks like. Yeah. Sometimes, you know,
to be honest with you, Doug, that was what my Camp 5 presentation was about.
Oh, what? Oh, damn.
Yeah. Okay. My Camp 5 presentation was about from failure to fire, the importance of a supportive spouse. And literally, I kind of use our story as a case study. What can happen when someone kind of comes to you with like kind of all these different ideas? And I create this framework. And this framework, because I have a background also in our relationship coaching. And so me and my wife have been relationship coaches for, goodness, 25 years. We work with distressed and premarital couples. And one of the things that kind of got me to do that presentation is that I was actually at a couple five-ins. And I was like, I'm around all these really smart people. And they can answer all these questions. But every time I heard somebody say, man, how can I get my spouse or my mate on board? Nobody really had any answers to it. I'm like, okay. I was like, I got a background in this thing. This could be my contribution. So literally what I did is I created this process or this framework called CENT, and that's C-E-N-T. And that stands for communicate, evaluate, negotiate, trust. And literally it allows you to sit down, and it basically gives you a format for you to sit down and share kind of what your financial aspirations are with your mate. Like, okay, this is what I think we should do. And basically it focuses on what can be gained through it. And you don't use I's, you use we and us and stuff like that. And basically it's a back and forth between you and that person to get them to understand that ultimately when it comes to financial independence, it's not really a thing about me. It's a thing about us. That's what that presentation was about. And really it allowed me to kind of marry my history of being a money nerd along with my background of being a relationship coach.
Brilliant. Is that talk already on Stephen's Campfi YouTube channel? Do you know if it is?
No, it's not out there. It's not out there yet. I know he's working on editing it out, but it's not out there yet.
He's so behind. Come on, Stephen, buddy. But we'll link up to Stephen's channel. Mm-hmm. So whenever it does come out, folks could check it out. All right. This is an amazing framework because it makes sense. I mean, it fits. It's so brilliant.
I was in the Army and I was in corporate America. So it's nothing like a hearty acronym, man. So I had to work it. I was like, what can I do? I was like, C-E-N-T, money, relationship. So I just did that. So
Yeah. You wedged it right in there and it works perfectly. Okay. So by 2020, you were studying hard, all the FIRE concepts, and you're like, hey, we're pretty close. Did you have a specific number in mind? And I'm not sure, I didn't check with you ahead of time, but are you able to share like some numbers? Like, did you maybe like your net worth? Do you know your expenses? Mm-hmm. Whatever you want to share. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to, that is totally fine.
No, I mean, it's fine. I mean, I'm not writing any loans, so it's okay. Literally what I did is I went into it and, you know, the first thing I looked at was, okay, when we get ready to make this transition, do we want to tote a mortgage in or not? And I know usually that's kind of like, you know, a sticky topic in the community. Like, you know, so people are like, hey, you know, it depends on your interest rate, if you should keep it or not, if you should just invest a difference in the market and everything else. One of the things that I wanted to do is that I am, even though I quit a very comfortable job to go start a car dealership, I am risk averse. I really am. So one of the things I didn't want to do is I did not want to take a mortgage into the RE component of it. We had a good rate. Our rate, I think, was like 3.25. So, I mean, it wasn't extremely low, but it wasn't really high anyway. And I mean, it definitely exceeded the market return, but I wanted us to go ahead and get that down because I knew by taking that down, that mortgage, that it would take our FI number down. I think I calculated like $250,000 or something like that. I was like, no, we wouldn't have to do it. So I was like, let's just do that. So we decided to do that. Outside of mortgage, everything else, we were like, hey, you know, for us without a mortgage, we didn't believe in car payments. So one of the last things that we did when I had my regular employment, that we just paid cash for a new vehicle. So we did that. So we knew that we would need around like $60,000 a year, but we also do have some rental properties. And I said that we thought between open a car dealership and real estate, but we did eventually end up going to real estate. So we did do some real estate. So we have some rental properties that supplement some of our living expenses. So we knew that basically outside of the rental properties, everything else, we probably need about $1.5 million. So between what we did with rentals, and we wanted to have at least $60,000 to be able to pull from our investable assets. So we wanted to have $1.5 million.
Okay, got it. And then how many rentals do you have?
We have 4 doors.
And then are you managing that yourself, or do you have a company, a property management company?
We started off with the property management company because we were relatively new to it. And so we wanted to at least, you know, go ahead and use them while we felt like we got our knowledge up. Kind of definitely shout outs to Bigger Pockets because I spend a lot of time, you know, trolling over there in the forums and learning a lot of stuff. And then once I got to the point where I feel like me and my wife, we knew enough about it, we went ahead, we took the PM out, did it ourselves. You know, the most important decision that you make really as, you know, a landlord is who you decide to put inside of your property. And so we want to make sure that, you know, we had a good rapport with those individuals, that we understood them. And probably one of the biggest things that we realized that, like, when we did have a property manager, that there were some things that they were allowing to happen that we would not allow to happen. We felt like it should have been a little bit more care going on with our tenants. And so like, you know what, let's just not do this. We can do a better job on our own. So we just started doing it on our own.
How long did it take for you to get rid of the property managers and take it on yourselves?
Probably 2 years. Okay. I want to say 2 years because I think we got our first rental in 2017. I want to say in 2017, we got our first rental. We used it into probably like 2019, And then we started doing property management for everything else on our own.
Got it. Okay. Are those four homes?
Single families.
Okay. They are in the local area there?
Yes. I like to invest where I hang my hat. So they're all on the west side of Jacksonville, because I live on the west side of Jacksonville. And I just know I have an intricate knowledge of kind of what goes on. If something else happens, I can get over there quickly.
Got it. Okay. So quick summary. So expenses, roughly $60K a year. You have some supplemental income, of course, from the rentals. So the nest egg you were looking for, $1.5 million. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then, of course, market returns helped out. Like you guys recovered, and I think you mentioned 2010, you were like in good shape. You were like, all right, let's start investing. And then whatever, 10 years go by and you're like, wow, this is working out. And you find out you're like pretty close. Mm-hmm. When you determine the 1.5 million number, were you like, when we hit it, I'm going to quit? It sounds like you kept working for a little longer. How did you make the decision to quit or not quit?
That's always a tough decision to make, because, and I was talking to somebody recently, Maggie Tucker. I was talking to her about this recently. Mm. The thing is that usually whenever you quit your job, when you're in a situation like this, you are usually at the highest point that you've ever been in your career. You know, it's usually not a situation where it's like, you know, you become like a president, all of a sudden, you know, you slide back down like being like a director, and then you leave. Usually you're at the pinnacle and you have your highest position and you have the highest income that you've ever had. So it's a tough decision to make. But the thing is that I really had to get to the point where I had to think about, okay, if I continue to work, because I definitely was guilty of one more year. I'm not going to lie. I did one more year. But the thing is, I'm like, okay, I'm like, if I continue to do this, how is this really going to impact my life? Is it really going to change what I do? I mean, I'm still going to eat $3 tacos. I really am, because I enjoy them. You know, so I really had to think about it that way. I'm like, but one thing I can't get back is more time. And so I really had to get to the point of like, hey, you know what? This is ultimately, Doug, one of the things I thought about. And this is almost like the movie A Christmas Carol. And this is what kind of really hit me in the face. I had a dream. I was talking to young Nick. And this is like in the middle of like my one more year. And young Nick came. Young Nick, he had hair. It was great, you know, because I used to have an afro and all kind of stuff. I told him, he's like, hey, man, he's like, remember, like, I used to like always take my lunch to work. And like on Fridays when everybody wanted to go out to eat on Friday, you're like, oh, no, I'm cool. I'm going to warm my food and go to the break room. And how like I would want stuff, but I'd be like, no, I'm going to wait. How'd that turn out? And then I had to tell him like, well, you know, well, we got enough money, but I'm kind of scared to take the jump. And dude's like, what? He's like, I didn't do all this crap, man, for you to get scared when it's time for you to cross the finish line. Yeah. And so I really had to be like, oh, man, you know, I was like, I had to hold myself accountable to myself. And I was like, I got the money to do it. I'm like, just take the jump, man. You know, and that was like kind of the hard thing I had to do. I was like, I got to be accountable to myself. Why make the sacrifice if you're not going to take the reward? And so that's really what I had to understand. And so I had to go ahead and just, you know, make that jump.
That's a great stories. And the thing is, like, that is what people, like, that's what advice we may give folks, right? Like, hey, like, imagine having a conversation with your younger self and you literally had the dream to allow you to do that. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting. Now, a lot of people are in a job where they dread it. So even if they are at the height of their org chart hierarchy or their salary, they're like, this fucking sucks and I want to quit.
Right.
And it's easier for them to get away from it. Now, they still may run into some identity issues, which we'll talk about in a second. But how were you in your job? It sounds like you had pivoted some. So maybe you were doing something a little more interesting or newer, or you were continuing to learn. But how was your career from a emotional standpoint?
From an emotional standpoint, one of the first things is that I did a stint in the Army when I first got out of high school. And so I did that. I did 4 years there. And then I got my first corporate job. And I remember being there, you know, trying to learn stuff and do whatever. And then, like, I heard the term RIF. And I had no idea what it was, because when you're in the Army, I mean, as long as you're willing to reenlist, you got a job. Then somebody was like, hey, that's a reduction in force. I was like, well, I think I know what that is. I was like, you mean like layoffs? And they're like, yeah. And so I remember that's the first time I was like, man, I don't have a guaranteed job. And so what do I need to do? And so that kind of reinforced the need that I was like, okay, I want to make sure that I'm financially stable. And so whenever like these conversations start happening, I'm going to be better off. So as time kind of went on, because every like 3-4 years, you hear like the murmurings, the rumor mill of gold, and all of a sudden, you know, they'll pull you into the office. They'll be like, well, we have to make an announcement. If you're in here, you're safe. But we've notified everybody else who've been impacted. At least that's the way they used to do it in my employer. And so as those conversations were had around being laid off, every time it happened, every few years, I'm like, okay, I'm in a better situation. And so literally kind of like toward the tail end, I'm not saying I had checked out, Doug, but I was like, my eyes were like, okay, I'm not trying to climb this corporate ladder anymore. I was like, I'm okay. I was like, I'm doing what I'm doing. I can do it good. Matter of fact, I can do it on autopilot. I don't even really have to think now. And so really, it freed me, because some people who have that identity crisis were like, okay, I am the VP of the North American market, and they have this thing where they're constantly trying to climb it. I was okay. I was like, I don't have to have that anymore. So as far as having an identity crisis, I knew that what I wanted to be was somebody who did good in society. And so that's who I wanted to be. I wanted to be known as someone who was a volunteer, somebody who was willing to speak out for those who didn't have a voice and things like that. So that's really what I want to transition over to once I stopped traditional work. And so that really was something that I started trying to prepare for, even kind of leading up to whenever I decided to RE, because mm-hmm. I had the privilege of talking to other people saying, hey, you know what? They're like, hey, retire to something. And so, and don't just wait till you stop, because like, you can only, you know, play golf so long, or you can only, you know, if you drink, you can only drink so much, you go to the beach, you're going to go to the beach so much. You got to have something that fulfills you. And so I started kind of checking out some things even before then. I started volunteering with certain organizations. I started trying to get like a routine at the gym and stuff like that. So when it came to the identity portion, I don't think I really dealt with a whole lot of anxiety around it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's only because I was fortunate enough that so many people told me to look out for it, that yeah. if I don't prepare for it, I'll have to deal with it.
Pretty similar with me. I think I've learned from other people ahead of me and like was really thinking about that. And then the other part is similar to your career. Like by the time I got laid off, I was not super enthusiastic about the work that I was doing. So I wasn't mm-hmm. really like proudly saying, hey, this is the work I'm doing, versus some people, they are mm-hmm. taking pride in their work, which is a valid thing. I mean, it sounds mm-hmm. fine. Now, one big thing you mentioned, Nick, is you were like, I want to be someone in the community who does good and help people out. That's a very mm-hmm. enlightened approach just in general. Mm-hmm. Why are you like that? Like, how did you figure that out?
Man, my birth order, I am the youngest of 4 kids. And are you the youngest by any chance? Are you a single kid or?
Middle child.
The only person who has it more challenging than the youngest is the middle child. And so I know I felt like as the youngest, I was never heard. I feel like I never had a voice. And so I always felt like, you know, I was like, when I get big, I'm going to speak up for people who can't speak. I'm going to do for people who can't do for themselves. So I think that was kind of ingrained in me as a child. And so I knew once I got older, that is something that I wanted to do. And so now having the time to be able to do that, that's now what I do. I'm fortunate where right now I don't have to, I've never been motivated by money. And so my thing is that, you know, I have enough to meet my needs and some excess as well, so I can give. But now I'm able to go ahead and focus my efforts on those who need someone to champion for them. So that's what I try to do now, whether it is working with the elderly, even though I'm not as young as I used to be, I'm not as old as they are. So right. I can still help them out and do stuff. So I help out the elderly. I go, you know, I give out food at food shelters. I'm currently, you know, doing some other things with my elected officials trying to get some projects going. So that's just something that I know I wanted to be able to give my time to. At one point I had thought about running for office, but like, I don't want to run for office. I just rather work for the people who are elected than to try to actually seek any type of office. But that's what I know I want to do with my time.
Okay. That seems like a fine decision. Just you could help but you stay out of the weeds a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
You get pulled down into the political situation. So, okay. Yeah. As we're looking at some of the details, or I'm looking at my sheet here and just mm-hmm. notes that I've taken. So you mentioned your expenses and your wife retired in 2023, so about 2 years, mm-hmm. and then you mm-hmm. only have about a year plus. Mm-hmm. How have your expenses changed? Anything unexpected? Did it like stay steady at 60K? Because sometimes mm-hmm. people are like, oh, we're doing something a little different, and you don't know mm-hmm. what you don't know. So any surprises?
No huge variations. I wish I could say that we traveled more, but we waited late in life to have kids. So we still have school age kids. at this particular point. We have a 12 and a 15 year old. So we can't like do a lot of traveling outside of, you know, their breaks. So we do some stuff during like the summer. Like this summer, we went to Europe for a month. So that was pretty cool. But at the same time, you know, being in the community, we always try to optimize. So we're trying to figure out ways we can hack that stuff. So, I mean, so even the bulk of that the travel stuff we do, we don't pay a whole lot of it because, you know, we're doing, you know, points and stuff like that. I worked from home. Both of us pretty much worked from home remotely. So it really wasn't a change as far as like we didn't see a great decrease in like, you know, gas and stuff like that or eating out. I'll probably say our expenses maybe went down just a little because I have time to like do stuff that I used to pay people to do. Like, for instance, like I got time like to change the oil in my cars and stuff like that now. So it's the stuff that I like kind of used to have to like take my mechanic to do. I actually do that. So it doesn't move the needle huge, but I do have just time to just do stuff that I would have had to give individuals money to do before I had this extra time.
Gotcha. That's cool. And some people end up, like you mentioned, you guys aren't doing any specific traveling, but travel is one where it's almost like it can infinitely, like you can spend more and stay. I mean, you can still do the same kind of trips, but it's just, you can get a different lodging option or you can get cheaper, more expensive food or whatever. So it's one of those deals. Now, one thing, and it could be a little different for you with the school age kids, and then you have potentially college and stuff to think about too. But I know many folks that I talk to, they're like, our expenses are X, but actually our returns are more than what we expected them to be. Mm-hmm. And it turns out we're not spending enough money. So I hear that story occasionally. Yeah. And then Die with Zero is very popular. People are talking about it and then spending towards value. So we're not talking about wasting money and doing anything, not wasteful, but are you investing or spending more in certain areas where you're like, you know what? We have a little more than what we expected. And now I'm getting, now you're getting guac on the $3 tacos, that kind of thing. So
what are we talking about? It's sour cream, man. Yeah, know, we've always been big on experiences. So now we try to have more experiences. And when we do those experiences, we try to make sure that they're more enjoyable. Like say, for instance, like years ago, what I would have done, like say, for instance, we want to go to a theme park. I'd be like, okay, we'll go to the theme park. We'll stay at like a hotel, like outside of the theme park. And then, you know, we'll like drive in and do all this other stuff. And then, but then when we're doing that, I got to deal with the headache of like having to park. And then I'll have to do everything else. So now it's like, we're going to go to a theme park. I was like, if there's a hotel on the theme park, we'll just stay at the hotel. Now we can take the shuttle in. We'll have to deal with all that kind of stuff, make it more enjoyable. If we're going to like, say, a concert, instead of being in the nosebleeds, we're pulling down a few rows, you know, getting closer to the action. Sometime, you know, if there's a VIP option or something like that, we'll do it. Yeah, we do spend more money, you know, in aspects like that. But at the same time, Doug, we still, you know, find opportunities to do stuff and save money because we do a lot of volunteering, but also we do volunteering and stuff like at places that like we want to like attend. So we don't have to pay to go. Like say, for instance, there might be a food and wine festival. I'm like, well, I'll volunteer to set up and I'll just stay there and hang out. So we'll do little stuff like that, man. It's just kind of ingrained in us. We do realize that, you know, there's certain times like it's okay to spend a little bit more. It's a challenge because once you've been wired a particular way for so long, it's hard for you to be like, okay, well, you know, just not look at that price on the side of the menu. It's just kind of hard to, even if you know that, you know, it's not going to break you, it's still hard to like change up sometimes. But I feel like we're getting better at it. One thing I can say we've started giving more money. And so now one of the things that we did before we stopped working is that we opened up a donor advised fund. And like, we want to make sure that we fund it because we want to continue to be able to like kind of give. We don't want the concerns with that, you know, the first couple of years kind of challenging, you know, to really trust the numbers, even though you want to trust them. So I still want us to be able to give. So we opened up a donor advised fund. We're now able to go out and just like kind of give money. And that money, that donor advised fund is growing also, which is good. So we're actually like, we've been reaching out to some different organizations saying, hey, you know, how can we help or stuff like that. So we've definitely, I feel like we've increased in the actual charitable giving area.
Very cool. Yeah, a lot of parallels. I mean, I still like a deal. And I'll shop on price because it's part of the hunt. But yeah, it's like, yeah, if I save $2 on a piece of steak or whatever, it doesn't really make a huge difference.
Yeah,
but it's fun to get the deal.
Yeah, it is. I ask you this question, Doug. You know, it's like, you know how people said like there's like these endorphins and stuff that get released like when people go shopping?
Yeah.
I get that same rush like when I save money on something. That's the way I feel.
Yeah.
I get so excited. 50% off? What?
Yeah.
You know?
It's great.
I'm excited, man.
Yeah. And, or if you have a coupon, like the rare, like we don't seek coupons out, but occasionally where it's like, oh yeah, we'll go to that restaurant and we'll get the whatever 10% off the appetizer or something like that.
That kind of thing. I'm a black belt when it comes to that. I'm a black belt. I'm all about like buying the gift cards, like when they're bonus gift cards. And then I go and I take the gift cards back when I got some type of promotion going on. So I do that. And then I have to ask on top of that promotion. Yeah. Do you have like a military discount, an AARP discount? I'm running them all the way down. And I'm always going during happy hour, man. So the apps and everything is all right.
Oh yeah, yeah. The happy hours are great, and because we're retired, we can go and have dinner. Oh. And we're getting old too, so I eat dinner at like 4:30 or something. So it's just like it fits perfect. Yeah. You're in there with some of the other older, more traditional age retirees, but
yeah, it's fine. I get looked sometimes. Like people ask me what I do. I'm like, hey, like what I had started telling people at one point is I was a professional man of leisure. So they were looking at me crazy. I think that was like from a movie like Superbad or like McLovin, I think, was saying he's a professional man of leisure or something like that. So I'll tell them that. Now I just tell them that I'm a financial literacy advocate. That's what I tell them. So that's my thing now.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's a good transition as we're wrapping up. So you're over at Everyday Money Heroes. You have a podcast and mm-hmm. I'm not sure the breadth of the full platform, but mm-hmm. what are you working on there? What's the goal?
Yeah. With our Everyday Money Heroes, our motto is that we provide information and inspiration to people of all ages to take control of their financial journey. And that's literally what we want people to do. We want them to feel empowered. There's a podcast. We're also on YouTube as well. So that's kind of like the fundamentals of financial independence. I talk about that there. But I'm also what I do. And since I'm such a fan and a champion of the FIRE community, I like, okay, how can I go ahead and how can I spread this word? Because even though I am such a fan of like my meetups and stuff like that, the individuals who are sitting there, at some point they've heard about the concept. And I almost sometimes feel like, you know, we're preaching to the choir. And so I'm like, how can we get people to come and attend that first meeting? And so what I do through workshops within my community is that I have these financial independence discussions. And so literally what happens is that I'll rent out a library. I do the folks from the local Jacksonville group. They'll come and they'll act as a panel. And I go out, you know, and I'll reach out to churches or reach out to other nonprofits. And I'm like, hey, I'd like come to this library at this time. You know, we're going to discuss financial independence and what it is. And literally, I'll give a presentation there, tell them about what financial independence is. I give them some statistics because a lot of times people don't understand statistics about, hey, you know, how most people's net worth is zero or less, how most people can't deal with an emergency of $400, how, you know, most people at 59 are not prepared for retirement. And I just go through and I share all those statistics. Then I really try to bring it home with saying, okay, well, what if you could live your ideal day? What would it look like? Then I ask them what their typical day looks like. But then I was like, you can actually do that in retirement, right? Because, you know, that's when you can do all your fun stuff. But then I asked him, I was like, well, if that's the case, why people who are considered to be a traditional retirement age, like 65, are still working? And I tell them all the time, most people at 65 don't want to check receipts at Walmart. They don't. They do it because they don't have a choice. I was like, what could you do to position yourself to have options to not have to do that? And so at that particular point, then we go into some video and like a lot of videos that Stephen has on Camp Fire is great. So I might show something from there. I might show something from economy there. And then after that, it'll kind of, hopefully it'll spark enough interest at that particular point where they'll want to ask questions to me and the rest of the panel. And we'll sit there and they'll answer questions there. We have a really awesome group here. So I'm always have people who are willing to sit there on those panels. Like I made reference to Matt and Yana, the Coast Five couple, they're there. Another guy named Tightwad Todd, he's there. Other folks who have to kind of get plugged in there. And we'll answer those questions. And the hope at the end of the day is that we don't give them all the answers. We give them the concept. We try to focus and point them back toward those local groups. Like, hey, you know, do you want to learn more of this? Hey, join this Facebook group. Come to these meetups. We can be around these people because you might not have anybody in your family who or in your friend circle who is even talking about this kind of stuff. And you won't have all the answers. But the thing is that now you have the interest and we can help you with it. So I'm doing those kinds of things. And also I'm currently working with my elected officials where I'm trying to get some type of financial literacy day here in Jacksonville. So hopefully that'll work where we can just kind of have a kind of citywide initiative. But the core tenet of that, I want to be financial literacy, but I also want to talk about financial independence. Because research shows that there is a tie to life expectancy and your net worth. And so if we can increase an individual's net worth, we can give them more years of their life. And I think that's a beautiful thing.
Awesome. Very cool. And if people want to check out the podcast, check out the YouTube channel, mm-hmm. We'll put links, but do you want to direct them in any certain place?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The best place to catch me is probably on YouTube is Everyday Money Heroes. I also have a website, Everyday Money Heroes. I do have an Instagram and stuff like that, but it's probably best to catch me on YouTube. If you do have any questions or anything, please feel free to reach out. We're always looking for an opportunity to answer questions because, you know, just like I know, Doug, it's a lot of bad information out there. And the thing is that if we can keep somebody from wasting time chasing the wrong things and get them pointed in the right direction, that's the desired result there.
Perfect. All right. So we'll link up so it's easy for everybody to find. Now, I'm going to ask another question here. So we're just going to leave it in where the order is a little out of order.
Okay.
So you are the youngest of four, you said, right?
I am. Mm-hmm.
What does your family think about you guys retiring?
You know, it's so funny. So kind of going back to the story of me charging my mom interest on the $2, right? They would always pick at me when I was a kid. They're like, oh, you're so cheap. You're so cheap. And I used to always tell them, like, it's different between being cheap and being frugal. I am frugal. And so what happened is that me being the youngest and my other siblings still having to work. They're like, no, he's like, I'm not surprised. We always thought that, you know, we knew it was something different about you. We didn't know what it is. And so literally with that being said, they were not shocked that it happened because I guess they knew how I was about money and personal finance. And they would come to me and ask me questions about stuff. So they knew I had a particular aptitude about it. Yeah, that's it. So okay. I try to be a resource for them as well. Actually, gotcha. My brother is having an event in Hoover, Alabama in February. I'll be there speaking at his event because he wanted somebody to come in and talk about financial literacy. He's a pastor out there. So I'll be doing that at his church.
Yeah. That's cool. Very cool. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Nick, this has been amazing. And like I said, we'll link up so people can get to everything. Really appreciate you taking the time today.
Yeah, no problem, man. I know I've seen you in past and I'm happy that we had a chance to have a deeper conversation here.
Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High Five podcast and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. You, I believe, are a frequent attendee of Camp Fies. Do you have some Camp Fies coming up that you're going to in the next, say, year or so?
I do. I will be at Camp Fies Southeast. So it was March 6th, I want to say, that we're doing down here in Hawthorne, Florida. So yeah, so I will be attending that one.
All right. That's cool. Are you speaking there or are you taking a break and letting some other new folks do some presentation?
I spoke there earlier this year, on March of this year, I spoke. Next year, I'll just be an attendee looking for some folks. I'm actually taking a couple first timers with me this time. So I'm going to go ahead and take them down to Camp Fies. I'm sure they're going to enjoy it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's so fun. And have those folks that are first timers at Camp Fies, have they been to have they been to just other events and meetups and stuff like that?
No, not really. And this is kind of like part of what I'm doing is that me and my wife, because we are so passionate about the actual community, we're actually gifting two tickets to Camp Fies. And so these people are like completely new to like the concept of financial independence. So these are people who I'm connecting with right now, you know, kind of inviting to some of the workshops that I'm doing here in town, saying, hey, you know what? And I'm giving them a checklist of stuff that they have to do to actually be able to be entered into the drawing to be able to get those tickets. So I'm asking them to do stuff like calculate their net worth, look at their spending for the last year and stuff like that, just to really understand what it is. And then once they do those kind of steps in that checklist. I enter into a drawing and they get pulled to attend Camp 5. So I don't know who it is yet, but somebody will be going down there.
Yeah, that's great to get them like initiated, and then they're starting to take some action. So they're kind of committed to the process. And even if they don't win, they're taking those steps. That's a great thing. And they're going to probably keep on going with it anyway. Or maybe they'll buy their own tickets because they're like, oh, I really want to go. That's cool. Yeah. What was the first Camp 5 that you went to?
First Camp 5 I went to, I want to say it was in 2022. Or three, I can't remember. I want to say it's either two or three. Because interestingly, what happened is that my boat capsized. Oh. and I can't remember which one it is. Because have you been to Southeast before?
I'm from Atlanta originally, so I have been around often in the Southeast.
Okay. Yeah, so they have a lake that's down there. I decided to get in there. And what happened is that I don't live very far from there, so like I drive my RV down. And so what happened is, like, well, since we're doing stuff there, I'll bring my family down because over the weekend, they'll just stay in my RV and I'll just kind of go and do the stuff. And, you know, Steven's a cool guy. And what happened is that, like, we hit a part where we go out and, like, do, like, canoes and stuff like that. And we got on, like, this, like, paddle boat situation. And so it was, like, a four-seater. So it was four of us and my family. So we all got in it. And what happened is that we're pedaling out. And all of a sudden, you know, me and my son are in the front and my wife, my daughter in the back, and we're pedaling out. And all of a sudden, my wife's like, he's like, hey, babe, she's like, we're taking on water. I'm like, we are? So I look back and we're like kicked up, like the nose is up. And so I'm like, I'm trying to get back around to the dock. So we turn around and Steven and John Thomas, I don't know if you've met John Thomas or not. And they're like, what's going on? Like, I'm taking on water and I'm paddling. Literally as I'm paddling, it just goes down, man. And like, and interestingly, we all have our phones in our pockets, right?
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. Well, you're not thinking, hey, we're gonna be in the water.
Yeah, that's, but needless crazy. To say, I don't want to say it's a good story now, but it was a little then. So needless to say, you know, we did end up having to replace all those phones. But
you did. I was gonna say.
The frugal guy and me, I don't pay for any insurance on any phones. I always get refurbished phones. And so with refurbished, they get a little squirrely about insurance, like even if you pay for it through your credit card and stuff like that. But yeah, that's it. So, and this is one thing I always tell Steven now, because Steven jumped in and pulled us out. Oh, and wow. So, yeah, literally. So I always tell Steven that he's my hero because he jumped in and pulled me out. Yeah, I'm like, just get my daughter. It was interesting, man. My wife, so like all her ID was inside of her phone, and it was like in the bottom of the lake, like in her phone case, like all kind of crap.
What an adventure.
Mine, man.
Mine was chill. I think I was in a canoe, but yeah, we stayed afloat and everything. So I wasn't sure if that was a metaphor. You're like, oh, we capsized. I was like,
we literally capsized. But yeah, it was great, man. And the folks there, you know, they took care of us. And one of the people who actually worked there, she went to the bottom. She went down like four or five times. And like the fifth time she came up, she like hit my wife's phone in her hand. She's like, I found it. I was like, what? You are amazing.
How deep was that?
I could not see her when she went down. I mean, I couldn't stand up in it. I'm 6 foot, and we had went out. We were past the dock, and we were coming back. And so at that point, man, she was going down, and she was like, she'd come up and she'd go right down, and she grabbed it, man. So yeah, man, it was needless to say, man, that story kind of matriculated kind of quickly, but we were okay. But needless to say, I don't go back on the lake anymore.
yeah. When I'm like, there's gators in those waters. It is. Down there, it is. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's what kind of hit me shook. I'm like, I gotta get out of here. I was like, I can swim, but I can't fight a gator and swim. But she was not afraid at all. She was a trooper. She went down there and came back up, man. So she was real nice. So needless to say, I did that, but I'll be going back. So it wasn't that traumatic, but it was definitely an interesting story to say the least.